Fascinating discussion tonight with our guest, Richard Florida. And we'll be back to take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Richard, before we go to the calls, where are some of the 10 hot cities that you recommend?
Well, it's interesting. If I really pushed on where you would tell you to go, they would be major cities. So obviously New York, and actually we actually rate cities not only by economics but by life stage. New York, Washington, D.C. area, I mean the metro area, not just the city, San Francisco, L.A., and then around the world. I mean the whole area around Amsterdam, around London, the city I live in, Toronto, Sydney, Australia. And then some of the Asian cities, but I think those are the cities that are going to be the most competitive for the long haul. And I think in general, the bigger cities and the metros have a little bit more economic opportunity.
Okay, to the phones we go. Chuck in Illinois, take it away. Hey, Chuck.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure,
Richard,
thanks.
Listen, what is this? I don't understand why the government allows these companies to deal with China and Mexico. And at the same time, if you wanted to buy, let's say you were into tobacco, you wanted to buy tobacco from Cuba, the government would throw you in prison if you were able to do that, purchase tobacco from Cuba. All these jobs that we've lost here in America, why can't the government say, hey, enough is enough? We need Americans to go back to working like they used to work and make a decent living. Force them to stop dealing with China and Mexico. Why can't we do this?
Well, I'd say the best solution is to get the government out of the way on these things. I mean, I think they're just screwing up, mucking up the water. So I think the best thing to do is get them out of the way. And I mean, it's a hard question. Your question is it's heart wrenching. But I think, you know, if the companies, if that's what they think they want to do, and they think that's well, go. But I think what we have to do is invent better. Like George was saying, the guy who wrote in about the steel cabinets, we have to support companies that want to invest in our country. And I think when I really look at this, the people who know better what to do are the local officials, the governors, and the mayors who are – not all of them are good. Don't get me wrong. A lot of bad apples out there, but are trying to build up their economies. And I think one of the key things we have to do is just empower local entrepreneurs to build these economies. What I find in the United States is the places where the local entrepreneurs are building, whether that's the San Francisco Bay Area or different parts of the country, those are the growing places. But if we're just depending on big industry and the government, we're going to get ourselves in trouble. So I think the key is get government out of the way and just focus on where we need to invest in those productive, you know, individuals and companies and entrepreneurs and just get on with it.
Okay, but I just can't see an example would be, let's say you were to, you wanted to buy a fine pair of gloves from, let's say, Neiman Marcus. You would have to pay a high price for these gloves, and the gloves would still be coming from China or maybe Mexico. And I just don't understand why the government can't tell these companies enough is enough. You have to start hiring American workers, and the production has to be done here in the United States.
But yeah, I understand.
To me. I just don't understand it. The economy's terrible. We're going right down the drain.
Well, I agree with that. I think here's the way I would try to phrase that or think about it. When you can trade and when you can trade across borders, generally speaking and in most times, it means that you're going to get a pretty good allocation of people's productive assets and resources. So no country wants to make everything. You want to trade. If a certain country makes gloves better, if a certain country makes steel better, if a certain country makes software better, if a certain country makes music better, that's better off for everyone. I think the problem is when the country stops making just about everything. And as much as I wish government could come in and help, I think they just mess it up. I really do. I think if you had government issuing the orders and saying, you make this here, you make gloves here, you make TV sets here, you make technology here, we'd have an even bigger mess than we do now. I think the real key is that we let people be productive, use their talents, use their skills. And what I've noticed in studying the United States, I'll tell you the truth, and this is when I lived in Pittsburgh, when the government tried to protect that steel industry went down faster. When the government tried to protect the car companies, they got lazier, they invested in less technology. Competition can be a good thing, but we have to get government out of this business and make sure, you know, people and entrepreneurs and we can use our productive assets as best we can.
We need another Lee Iacocca. You know what? I liked him.
We need a whole range of industrial leaders. And I think, George, you're saying something very powerful. I don't know what happened, but somehow being the leader of an industrial company was no longer seen as kind of interesting. Or, you know, you'd rather be, and I'm saying this, and I know where you're coming from, you know, you'd rather be, if you're a young kid, Paris Hilton or a kid on a reality TV show. I think there's something about making things that's quite honorable and good, and we just have to get people. I mean, I can quibble all day about Chrysler, but I think one of the things a guy like Lee Iacocca did was make it okay to be in a manufacturing business. I think Jack Welch did that. Whether or not you like Jack Welch, he did the same thing when he was at GE. And I think that's a good thing for America, that we focus on people who want to build stuff.
Absolutely. Next up, let's go to Jesse in California. Take it away, Jesse.
Hi. I was identifying with something you were talking about the people who are, like, spread out all over. When you were talking about people who are up to experience, I believe was the term that you used. Anyways, I feel like one of these types of people, I actually work in a beauty salon. I'm a massage therapist. And I recently had an experience where I got to meet a whole bunch of like-minded people from California who... We all went in a van to Washington, D.C. For an activist rally in Washington, D.C. for Ron Paul because of, you know, Federal Reserve Bank and the IRS and police state and all the stuff that you guys are talking about.
A little louder, Jess.
Sorry, I lost my voice at the rally. I was screaming, shut down the IRS,
it's gone.
Shut down the IRS.
All right, how about a question, though?
Basically, I wanted to say... do you think that there's a benefit to having these types of intuitive, creative type people all over, spread out all over, instead of in like one location?
Wow, that's a very good question. I think in the United States there's probably now a dozen locations of these kind of open to experience people. And I think that's the benefit. If they were all concentrated in one place, I don't think you'd have as many pockets of innovation, of new technology, of new ideas, and new business models. So I think it's a good thing. And I think we're the one country on Earth, I really do, that has a tremendous range of these kind of places. And the reason is we've attracted them from everywhere. If you're a young kid and you're open-minded from China or India or Europe today, you're going to come, still going to come to the United States and its major thriving centers. So I think it's a good thing. I find it really interesting, Jeff, that you said, you know, you're working in the beauty salon and massage therapy, and you've kind of found similar thinking people, and you've kind of found people with similar interests, and I find it tremendously interesting that you're finding a way to be activist. I think this is one of the great things that we need to get back to. And, you know, whether you're for Ron Paul or whoever it is, I think this sense of activism that we need to take control and we need to make our voice heard is a very, very powerful thing. So, you know, who would think? And I mean, I don't say this meekly, who would think, you know, you'd be calling in tonight and saying, I work in a beauty salon, I work in massage therapy, and I'm getting politically involved, and there's something politically that I resonate with. I think that's very important, and I only hope that more Americans kind of get with that, because if we let things in Washington keep going the way they're going, that's what I was saying to the previous caller. I think that's part of the problem. People have to make their voice heard and do things and get resonating and make sure that... you know, people hear a different point of view.
Absolutely. Key in Austin, Texas, first-time caller. Hi, Key.
Hi there. How you doing tonight, George?
We're well, thanks.
All right. First and foremost, I'd like to say thanks for taking my call. I'm a huge fan. I've been listening to the show for a really long time. And also, I was listening to you last night, and at the conclusion of your show, at the very moment that you were concluding, there was the hugest shooting star I've ever seen in the sky, which I thought, wow.
There you go.
What a great ending. I wanted to make a comment. It's very, very interesting to me, not only because you mentioned Austin, but I'm from a very small town in Louisiana. I've always had a different personality, kind of the outcast of my family. And you were talking about these experience seeker personalities. I moved to Austin for lack of interest in Lake Charles, Louisiana, which is where I was before this. And, you know, I couldn't help but relate to everything that you said. I have a college degree. I did have a hard time finding a job. Even though I had a solid work history, even though I had good grades in college, even though I had all of this, you know, fire in me to find a good job, I just, for some reason or another, I would not get hired. So I took it upon myself to start studying a different, I was a communications major, actually broadcast, and I took it upon myself to change my major into studying something that would be a little bit more self-sufficient, which was acupuncture. Strange, it's just a crazy chain of events which led me into acupuncture. But I can't help but agree with you about every single thing that you said. Everything hit. I'm living in Austin, and you mentioned that as one of the cities that attracts the experience seeker type personalities. I've got a 13-year-old daughter who has hot pink hair. you mentioned the crazy hair color. And I cannot wait until after I am finished with acupuncture school to move to a new place, because I can't wait to start over. It's just this innate thing inside of me that just makes me want to go to a different place. And my question for you is, do you think that the you know, I hear about these crystal children and indigo children, being that I have a child that falls under this category, sure, as far as everything that I know. Do you think that these kids that are growing up now that seem to be so different, do they seem, is there any personality group that you mentioned tonight that these kids that are born, are they more of one of the group? Or I find that a lot of these kids that are being born these days, that a lot of them seem to be experience seeker type personalities, as far as I can see, even when I travel into other places that are a little bit more remote from where I am right now.
Well, I'm a big fan of this young generation, and I think for all the ones that are distracted and doing kind of the wrong things, I've never seen a more engaged and a group of kids that really impressed me. And I was saying, we recently visited Siberia, Russia, and we met the old generation, and the old generation was just not with it. I went to the local university. I met the kids in Siberia, and I mean, the kids spoke perfect English. They could be kids from Austin or L.A. or Chicago, and I was just thinking, you know, and they're going to leave. But here is a young generation at the other end of the world. The other thing I'd recommend is, you know, your story is so wonderful, and it so resonates with our research and helps confirm it. That
thank you.
It's exactly, you know, if you had asked me where you said you grew up, I would have almost predicted you would go to Austin, because it's the closest open to experience place to where you grew up. And then you said something really interesting about your next move. And in my work, I talk about three big moves: when you graduate college, when you have kids, and then when the kids leave to go to college and you're an empty nester. And in the book, Who's Your City, I say at each stage you owe it to yourself to really think long and hard about where you want to be and the place that best fits you. And we built a tool, and if you go to the website at creativeclass.com, you can just click on it. It's called the Place Finder. We actually, it's like 10 questions. And if you answer those questions and put in some places that you think you might want to be, it really helps shed light on what are the kinds of places that you're going to resonate with and you're going to find fit in. So, and then it also says, you know, what I'd love if you could help us, and others listening in, if you have a similar story, people from all over the world are kind of telling their stories of the places they found and how they fit. And that's a great way for people to talk about it, but it's also a great research tool for my team and I. So I just encourage you, and you've made it to a great place that fits you. But I think in this next stage of your life, I think this is a great opportunity for exploration. And I think for both you and your daughter, it's now the time to start thinking, where do we want to go next? And really be systematic. You made it to Austin, and it was a great move for you. But what is my next place? What is the place that's going to fit me in this next life stage? What is a place my daughter might really find exciting and that's going to challenge her? And I think if you do it, if you do that in a systematic way, just like you found your new career, it's going to make you more productive, it's going to make you more prosperous, but most of all, it's going to make you even happier than you thought you might be.
Right, which is the most important thing to me, I believe.
I think that's the key thing, and, you know, we've been talking about this a lot. We used to think that more productive people who made more money were happier. It's the other way around. People who are happier are more productive.
Productive, exactly, exactly. If only I could my family to understand these concepts, it'd be great.
but I think the other thing is you found a place, and I want to get back to this with others listening in. If you don't find the place, think about it if you stayed back home, and think about people who stayed in their places, and they kind of get depressed, and they don't fit in, and they start questioning themselves. Because the place, it's like you're in a bad relationship or you're in a bad job. But when you find that place, when you find that place that fits you, like when you find the job or the partner that fits you, it kind of opens up a whole new lease on life. So I think that's you got to get that trilogy right. The partner, the friends, the career and the job and the place. When you get that trilogy right, and I think what's so great about it, what I want to learn from you, and that's why I say contribute to the discussion on the website, is this next big decision. I think you can even, I mean, you're in a great place now, and what you want to avoid is doing it wrong. I mean, you don't want to pick the wrong place, but if you find the next place for you, you can really even take your happiness to another level.
And Richard, how about making wherever you may be, for whatever reason, you know, your little kingdom, and make it the best you can?
I talk about that a lot in the book, and I say for some people that's quite possible. But for other people, if you're in a town that just doesn't let you be who you are, if you're in a town that hems you in, Jane Jacobs was the greatest urbanist, and I think one of the greatest thinkers. Woman didn't go to college, didn't finish college, didn't have a PhD, kind of really used to just yell and scream about college and university. She said to me once, I asked her the same question that you guys are asking. I said, Jane, why is it that some places are more exciting? Why is it that people have to search out a place? She said, well, Richard, they're creative people. There are interesting people everywhere. She said, but the problem is in some of these towns and communities, there's another kind of person. Jane called them, she gave them this name, the squelchers. And when you're in a community where these squelchers, no, you can't, that's not the way it's done here, we don't think like that. A lot of people who want to do things their own way, self-express and find their own way, they get miserable, so they have to find another path. But I think there are those who can make the best of a place, but for some people, they've got to find it. And I think that's the key. You've got to think it through. Can you make the best of your place, or do you have to find a place that fits you a little better? And then with the tools we have on the site at the Place Finder, we can help you make that choice and do it in a way that makes you more productive and happier.
Richard in Las Vegas. Hey, Richard.
Hi, George. Hi, Richard. George, I'd like to first say I really appreciate the thought you put into the guests you have every night. The shows are always great, and you're just fantastic.
Well, thank you, Richard.
I've got to tell you, and now I'm going to speak real fast so I can get my question out. I spent a long time in college. I'm in Husu in a different varieties. I built a five-year projection for a plan for a concept based in, it started in 1981, combining televisions with computers when people said I was crazy. And as time went on, I tried to push my project through, and I got run over and sidetracked by corporations or corporations who dealt with corporations. You're talking about government. You're talking about barbershops. But the real problem here is corporations stopping people who have real entrepreneurial ideas from getting those into a working phase by stopping them through their corporate sponsors. How do we get around these corporate sponsors?
Well, first, I want to commend your effort and just say, Richard, you know, you've just got to keep working and working and working. And I think...
And keep that right there, Richard, because we'll take this break. Richard, you stay with us, too, and we'll let you answer this when we come right back. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, science fiction writer and sci-fi writer Jerry Pournelle will love this guest. Dr. Richard Schild will be our guest, and Dr. Schild would talk about space telescopes and the universe, telepathy, ghosts, past lives. We've got it all for you on our next Coast to Coast show. Did you, in your research, Richard, did you also put into a, I guess, did you add in the ingredient of major earth changes and how they would affect regions around this country?
No, we haven't in the past, but we will in the future. In fact, one of the reasons I came up to the University of Toronto is it's an amazing place. It's a great city, but whether they're civil engineers or earth scientists or economists, so many people here have interest in cities and regions. So we're talking with people right now, and we have a center called the City Center run by these tremendous civil engineers and others, but we're talking right now about the effect of energy and the environment and also infrastructure. You know, I've studied economies and societies and cultures and personalities, but when you mentioned earth changes, there's also the infrastructure we build, and that's kind of like the skeleton that wraps around our natural environment. So trying to figure out not only the earth changes and the environmental changes, but how this skeleton should change for these new periods. So one of the things we'll be doing in the future is actually looking at what are the future of megacities and mega regions, how we can bring the earth, the environmental, the energy, the infrastructure, and the economic perspectives together. So it's something we're up to. Maybe we can talk about it in the future.
Absolutely. Let's go to Georgia. Jason, you are up with us east of the Rockies. Hi, Jason.
Hello. My question is with the lessons that we've learned in our history, being a humongous influence in many different industries, from your experience and knowledge, what is it that we can foresee as far as our contribution to modern day society when it comes to innovation? Or have we seen our best days and we're just going to be along for the ride?
No, I think the United States is really the world's innovative engine, and it's because we've been really the country that will welcome immigrants, anyone who wants to make a new invention, make a new innovation. And in Silicon Valley, 50% of those Silicon Valley companies had a member who was an immigrant, a foreign-born person. I think the problem is that innovative engine is still ticking. We're just squandering the proceeds from it. I mean, George has talked about this at great length. We're squandering it with bad financial innovations. We're squandering it through government spending, through adventures all around the world. And I think if we get back to what made America great, which is inventing and commercializing and building great companies, and those can be in manufacturing, but they can also be in the entertainment and technology and software businesses, we'll be fine. But we've got to stop squandering. I mean, it's very interesting that you said this, Jason. If we just stop squandering the proceeds from all the great stuff we make, we'll be fine. And I don't mean just live within our means. Just stop just throwing the money away. We'll be fine, and we get back to the basis of inventing and building.
Let's go back to Richard in Las Vegas. Richard, give us a capsule of your question again.
Well, if I could just interject one more thing. You know, I've even been to investment bankers with this, and you talk about entertainment, but if you see entertainment today, which was what I was in, you'll see most of the stuff that's shot on television is shot by United Kingdom camera people, personnel that come from overseas or Canada, not done by Americans here in America. There are a lot of problems with a lot of the things that you're saying.
Well, Richard, you made a very important point before, and you said this thing about, how do you get around the corporations and the corporate sponsors? And
right.
to be in truth, I mean, building a business is the hardest thing I think anybody can do, and folks listening in knows this, George knows this. I mean, I've been a professor, I got a PhD, but my wife and I have a little bitty company, and we work like the Dickens. And I mean, she was an executive, a vice president at major companies. And we struggle every day to build that company and to treat our customers well and to get around all the obstacles. But I think, more than one person has said it's 1% innovation and 99% preservation. And I think that's really, really, really important when you talk about that. There are there's going to be no limits to the obstacles that are thrown in front of us.
Well, I've sent out many, many business plans. I had the top people in the fields that I was working in. I even had Howard Hughes' attorney in Las Vegas working for me. And we still had trouble all along the way. And I haven't necessarily given up on the project. It's just that there's so many things that so many people you run into when you sit in a room in a hotel with eight people and you don't know who half of them are, and they want you to describe what's going on. You know, you can only go so far. And I realize that what I'm doing or trying to accomplish is a monumental thing. It's not starting small and growing, although I did want to do that, and I am looking forward to doing that. But I had to get a prototype in production, and that's where the problem lies, is between the prototype and the unit that I wanted to put the prototype in. And they're bumping into each other because of all these corporations.
No, absolutely. And I think sometimes it is, I understand scale issues are very important, but sometimes you just have to build that team. You have to build that team with trust. You have to get, you know, partners or teammates that you can really trust with your life and just, you know, kind of build and build and build and go for it. And I mean, you know, and just make your breaks. But I understand it because we go through it ourselves. And I want to say this, Richard, and everyone listening in, there's nothing harder. You know, I've done a lot of things in my life, and there is nothing harder than building a successful business. And one other little trick, I think, and I think you know this, Richard, I think the key to really a successful business is having the people who can execute. And I know in my case, I'm a great thinker, but I'm not the best executor. And, you know, one of my friends has a rule of thumb: for every great thinker, you need 10 spectacular executors. And it's a rule of thumb, but I think it's just persevering and literally going around every obstacle or through them and blocking and tackling. And I know, you know, you're doing it, you've been doing it. Now it's more than 25 years for you. But I think just that focus on execution, staying fixed in your goal, and just making sure you have that team of people who can execute with you, and you will persevere.
California we go. Hello, Sean, take it away.
Hi, gentlemen. Terrific show this evening. I have a comment. I could agree with more with what you're saying, sir. I'm resonating completely with it. I recently moved over to Oakland from San Francisco after 10 years. The city just broke me. Couldn't afford it anymore. Now I live in a warehouse, whatnot. I'm really feeling the class 5 personality as well. Something I'm seeing kind of, I don't know the statistics offhand, but I'm noticing that the school systems don't have this art and science integration anymore, where, you know, you look in Tesla's day, Tesla hung around artists, and, you know, it was like the artists were inspiring, and then the scientists were innovating, and they were kind of coming together in a, you know, at the coffee store or whatever. And what I'm wondering is, are we going to see a trend in this science and art fusion again, maybe in our public systems, and maybe... I mean, because I really see that's where the word this fusion is in the arts and the sciences and the entertainments and this classified personality that kind of they're pioneers in a great sense, and I'm just kind of wondering at that same token, me myself having just been burnt out with ADD, having so many experiences, and I just can't seem to focus. In this time of craziness and distraught and the world and everything, where to find inspiration and where to for people that are kind of just going through a rut right now where they don't know what to do because they got so many wants and it's almost like wanting is funner than having, as they say. I don't know. I'm just kind of making a point and also kind of asking a question. You know, I'm having a career change and all this stuff, and I hate to admit it, but I believe I'm lost.
Well, I first of all, I'd say congratulations on your move. I think you're right. San Francisco, a city that I love, has become prohibitively expensive, and Oakland is a great place, and it's a place that's kind of on the move. Who would have thought, like 20 or 30 years ago, that Oakland and the whole part of the Bay Area over to Emeryville would be the kind of exciting place that it's become today. So first of all, congratulations.
Hey, second, I congratulate you for knowing about this place. That's amazing to me.
I'd like to say that I think you're right about this integration of science and art. One of the reasons I wrote Rise of the Creative Class is because I would spend a lot of time in Washington at forums on the future of innovation and U.S. competitiveness, and they would talk about science. And they would talk about technology and the need to have more math and science and engineering. Well, technology makes up 6% of our economy,
art and entertainment and music are a much bigger segment of our economy today. And the reason I wanted to advance that theory is to say that it's not an either or, it's together. That what is really key to building a thriving economy is to grasp great science and technology, but also great entertainment. And, you know, if you look at the greatest companies we've produced, from Google to Electronic Arts, look at Apple, you know, this fusion of science, technology, and art. Look at Bloomberg, technology and information and financial markets with entertainment. And look what's happening in our major media. So I think that's right. And I think in the United States, we've moved away. We've kind of seen art and music as these kind of frivolities that aren't serious. But if you really look at it, it's not just the fusion. Many of our greatest scientific minds were stimulated. You know, Paul Allen, right, the co-founder of Microsoft, the thing that really stimulated him was listening to Jimi Hendrix albums all of his life. So, right, and then when he had to create his monument to Seattle, what does he build? Not a symphony hall or a hall of inventors, but the Jimi Hendrix Music Project to show the stimulation and the kind of role modeling. So, and then finally, with regard to ADD, I think you're right that we live in not only just an information overloaded time. I mean, the internet and information overloaded, and we all see this. I mean, it's hard for any of us to focus and read not a book, a paragraph, because there's so much. I think there's just so much stress. And when you said this about feeling a little bit lost, there's so much stress. And I once met this great entrepreneur physicist who built this just wonderful electronics company in Australia. And he said to me, Richard, and Peter Jackson actually told me this about moving his company to New Zealand from L.A. Huh. He said, creative people just don't work well under stress. Creative people need time to relax and chill. And if they're in a rat race and worried about their mortgage and worrying about being in debt and worried and worried and worried, they can't be creative. And he moved to Wellington, New Zealand, this little town in Wellington, where he said, I can create a great film company, but I can enable my people to relax and have high quality of life. So just my recommendation to you is just find a space where you can chill out and relax and focus, and just get off the information bandwagon and try to reduce stress. And I think that sometimes leads to a lot more clarity.
Hey, this show's giving me goosebumps tonight, gentlemen.
All right. Well, good luck to you, Sean. Thank you for being on the show. Nebraska. Hey, Jack, take it away.
Oh, George?
Yes, sir.
And your guest?
And you're with Richard, Florida.
Oh, okay, Richard. I got a statement, and then I'll take your response off the phone then.
Okay.
I was just wondering why we forgive foreign nations for loans if we're so indebted. Like, I heard that they forgave Iraq for all the money we loaned there. Wouldn't that raise our gross national product if we got some of that back?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Richard, we do tend to be a little bit too benevolent sometimes, huh?
No, I'm not an expert in financial affairs, and I don't know why people forgive what they forgive, but you know, I think you're right. And if people run up a debt, they should pay it. And whether that's a country or an individual, that's at least what my dad taught me. But, you know, what worries me, George, I'm sure it worries you and the caller. Who's going to forgive our loans?
Nobody.
I mean, that's the thing that, I mean, we are so, I mean, we make everybody else pale in comparison with the debt that people hold of us and our obligation. So, I mean, I'm saying this tongue in cheek, but who in God's name is going to forgive our loans? Because if anyone needs their loans forgiven, it's us.
Absolutely. How long have you moved, been in Canada, Richard?
We've been here for almost 1 year.
1 year. I don't know if you recall a Canadian by the name of Gordon Sinclair, and then another fellow by the name of Byron McGregor, who used to be at CKLW, the station I'm on in the Detroit market right now. And Byron recorded Gordon Sinclair's writing called The Americans. And it was absolutely riveting about how we as America, we were always there for everybody. Yet who's there for us? You know,
yep.
Where's the thanks?
And I think one of the most interesting things, I mean, think about how close Toronto, I mean, it's right on the border, right? All of Canada's population is matched, whether it's Toronto or Montreal or Windsor. But I think it's given me a very good window into the United States today, looking back. And I think And I'm not trying to pump up Canada, but I think Canada has managed its economy a little better. It has a lot of resources. It's spent within its means. And I think just being, you know, we don't have the housing, we may, but right now in Toronto, we don't have the housing catastrophe. They haven't given a lot of subprime loans. So you think you're in a country, you know, we kind of talk the same, we look the same, but it just was managed a little better.
Greed.
And I think it's given me a better window into the United States and the sense of denial that I see and that both of us see in Americans. So for me, it's been an eye-opener. It's just weird that you go, you know, 50 miles across the border and you get another eye-opener. And it's been just a great – I think every American should do it. And, you know, you don't have to go to Bangladesh or Beijing. You know, just cross the border to Canada or move to England or Australia, somewhere you speak the language. It gives you a very nice perspective on your country. Makes you love it more, but it makes maybe you get a little bit tougher love.
Go over the Ambassador Bridge from Detroit. I'm not going through the tunnel.
We drive all the time because we have family in Detroit, so we're driving back and forth, and we've got the Nexus passes, so we can make it pretty smoothly.
Greed got us, Richard. Greed got the United States, and that's where we are in the root of all this mess right now.
Yeah, and I think you're right, and I think it was greed combined with this just lack of awareness, and it's a kind of greed and ignorance that really worries me, because I think at the top there was tremendous greed, but then there's just so many, you know, decent Americans who just kind of bought it hook, line, and sinker. If I take that second mortgage, you know, if I run up this card, I'm going to feel better about myself. If I have that new car lease. And I think now they're forced to confront this and say, how do I really want to live the rest of my life? And what's interesting from the callers, too, is hearing about their kids. You know, what do I want for my kids? What do I want for my grandkids? What kind of country do I want them to grow up in? And I think now is the time for really thinking about that. And like you believe, and I believe, too, America has this incredible rebound capability. But we need to dig deep. I mean, you know, it's the fourth quarter and we're behind. We need to dig deep and to pull this one out.
Absolutely. But eventually we will.
I think that's what makes us great. And I think, you know, the other thing is it, and when we talk about foreign affairs, I think our great success story is immigration. And I think sometimes I think about who are the hardworking people who are saving like the Dickens, like your dad and my dad. I think those new groups of immigrants are saving and working hard and still believe in the dream. And when push comes to shove, we still have a lot of people from all around the world that want to
Absolutely.
Help us build it.
Richard, thanks so much. Richard Florida, website creativeclass.com, his latest book, Who's Your City? For Karis Coburn, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.